Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yeah. And that you are also shopping for cottage and cheese, just like that.
And yeah. I do shop. Yes, but people can't you take my word for it? I have a little bag in my car. I'll go into the Safeway.
I'll call you and tell you what.
Think about how much harder and more painful your eventual fall from grace would be if you were that much bigger. I think you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
By I'm sort happy. Of downplaying it.
I'm happy I get to see Bootsy.
Would you guys want to see him tweet out stuff?
But,
no!
Nope.
Okay.
Who cares? Sorry.
Don't interrupt our breakfast.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
We are live from Chatter inside the district line in the capital of the United States of America on the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Street Northwest. Soon there will be an ad in the Northwest Current newspapers that I have written. There will be a very good ad, a great ad, a huge ad.
Bigly.
One of the greatest of
great
all time.
Great place to reach people, newspaper.
You use the best words.
That's what I'm hoping for, because I love newspapers, even though nobody reads them and throws them out immediately. Gary Braun is here. Chris Saliza is here. Jack Evans, the head of the Metro Board and a longtime representative in the city, is here because he is pals with the socialite. And the socialite has to get away from his house because thousands of people are coming taking pictures of the outside of the socialite's house.
I've always been Nigel's more of a running the board. Nancy Taylor Bubis guy.
Yes, I think that's true. Scott Greenberger is here, who grew up very close to here and remembers me when I actually wrote for newspapers. And he has written a book called The Life and Times of Chester A. Arthur, I think it's about the life and times of Chester A. Arthur.
Spoiler alert.
And I'm sure it's fascinating. And I'm going to read some of it.
Yes.
Some of it. That's what I do. And if I love it, I will read much of it, but I will not read all of it. I don't do that.
I was here.
But I'm going to recommend it just because Scott was nice.
He was nice.
And it looks like it looks like an adult book. You know, it looks like he put some time in this. I asked him about, and I wonder about this. When you do biographies of people who are dead for over 100 years, you can't talk to anybody about it because everybody is dead.
Says you.
You have to depend on everything that has been written before. And in many cases, that which has been written before is not necessarily accurate. It just reflects...
Fake news.
Well, I don't know that it's fake, but it will reflect, like, the big profile of Chester A. Arthur...
Revisionist, perhaps.
...may be based on one particular thing that may or may not have ever happened. So
Chester
I wonder
A. Arthur succeeded Garfield.
Is that right? Yeah. Garfield the cat or
yes.
Garfield the president?
And then
technically.
He was ousted in a military coup by Odie.
Is that right?
Very, yes.
Anyway,
it's a lost part
Scott
of
Scott Greenberger
history.
Wrote the book.
With a name like Scott Greenberger, in a couple generations, he could have an SG3.
That's right.
Legitimate.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Scott did make reference to...
Nigel's very upset because the sun has come up and
it's
right in his eyes. It's right in his eyes.
By the way, did you see the moon and Venus again this morning?
I did.
Even more beautiful this morning. Yeah, that was amazing.
That's a good look.
Nigel wearing sunglasses indoors. You know, there's only two types of people that wear sunglasses indoors.
Crazy people and celebrities.
Right, and I'm neither one.
Speak for yourself.
Scott made this great reference to a line from a column you wrote years ago. I guess I forget what player he mentioned, but he said he does a lot of things that don't show up in the stat book, particularly driving other players.
Driving Purcell's into the game. Absolutely.
It's great.
All right, from Eric Voss in San Dimas, I hope I pronounced that correctly, California. Enclosed, please find an invitation to my wedding to the woman to whom I will soon be related by marriage, Lindsay McHugh. I've loved this woman for a long time, but I knew this was meant to be when I told her that my favorite orange-colored podcast host had bought a restaurant in D.C., and her immediate response was, well, we'll have to go there the next time we're in D.C. This is the same woman whose culinary tastes compel her to consider only 4- and 5-star establishments here in L.A. The instant level of approval for both you and me has to be good for something, right? Our wedding will be on Saturday, November 11th at the Little Door Restaurant in Los Angeles, only about a 15-minute drive from LACC in the Beverly Hilton. Whatever you do, don't drive with David because the traffic will definitely crush him here any day of the week. Average weather for that day, 74 degrees. Maybe don't tell Michael. We'll give you a seat in the back next to the exit door so that you can leave after no more than an hour. He buys movement watches and books and MeUndies and SeatGeek.
Right.
This is really nice. Anyway, thank you for all you do, he writes, and that's very, very nice. We wish Lindsay and
Congrats.
Eric all the luck in the world. I have another one here, a wedding, and this wedding is sooner, October 29th.
Where are these sent to these days? Did you get mail at the Palm anymore?
P.O. Box?
No, they're sent
it's
to Chatter.
Here?
They're all sent to Chatter. Enclosed, you'll find an invitation for you and the gang to my wedding on Sunday, October 29th at Keswick Vineyards, just outside of Charlottesville, Virginia. My dad, Ron Bailow. B-A-E-L-L-O-W, Ron Bailow, I don't know, and I are huge fans from back in the ESPN days, and pinned to the wall of my childhood bedroom still is a Tony Kornheiser autographed ESPN postcard from when he invited you to my bar mitzvah. I recently spent a wonderful birthday morning eating breakfast at Chatter. We have a small crowd today, but a very sophisticated crowd today. And even though we were there on a Sunday, the sign on the wall stated there had been 0 days since a Nigel mistake. Somehow, even on the weekends, he is screwing things up. So anyway, he screams La Cheeserie. It's from Dustin Bailow. And it's Jennifer Harvey and Dustin Bailow. So that's we.
Keswick Vineyard sounds nice.
It does sound nice. By the way, Maureen sent me a picture of the outside wall at Wrigley Field in which it is written in chalk, and I guess people do this. I'm not from Chicago, so I don't know how this works. Written in chalk, the Tony Show, La Cheeserie. Yes, now, it'll probably be erased in a day, but I thought that was
did
very cool.
Did Wilbon write that?
I doubt that very much. So let's start, because I personally did not sign a deal with the NBA that I have to do the NBA at all times. I think the NBA, in my mind, rates second today to the baseball. And the baseball last night, significant. The Yankees won a game they should never have won. They were down 4-0 into the seventh inning. Their starting pitcher was great, and they lost that game. They lost it 6-4, and every time the manager of the Houston Astros, Hinch, put in a reliever, that reliever was greeted with more hits by the Yankees.
Yeah.
And the start of it was the last pitch that the starter, McCullers, threw, which ended up over the wall courtesy of Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is enormous.
Which, by the way, that enormous pitch – We talked about the was it the Frazier homer the previous night? That Aaron Judge pitch was like low and away.
But he's 6'8".
I know, but he still like pulled it.
Yeah,
over the wall.
Frazier went to the right field side.
Right.
This is what is amazing to me, and even my wife looked at this. That after the game, she saw Kenny Rosenthal, who we know well.
It's the best. I know exactly.
Saw Kenny Rosenthal interviewing Aaron Judge.
They look like they are different species.
It's twins. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. It's unbelievable because Kenny's about 5'6 or 5'7.
It looks right. Like Aaron.
You can't believe the shot. E. Carroll said, "Look at that. How tall are they?" And I said, "About 5'7, 6'8.
It looks like Aaron Judge could be holding Ken Rosenthal in a cradle position.
Yeah.
I mean, he's swaddling him. He's gigantic.
Yeah. Do you watch again? I saw that. Now I think they're going to win the series.
Mark Feinsand.
I love Keuchel and Verlander in a row, but I don't know that they can stem this.
Mark Feinsand of MLB.com, Richie Justice's colleague, Richard will join us.
Yeah.
Tweeted last night when that home run happened that Judge's homer, which went 427 feet to center, had an exit velocity of 111.6 miles per hour. That's the hardest hit ball of the entire MLB season.
Is that right? That one ball?
111.5 miles per hour.
He and Bryce are consistently on
a ball that was low and away. I mean, I get the leverage of being 6'12 or however tall he is.
Wow.
But that was insane.
That is the game. Maybe you come back from that game. But if that's the game that wins a series for the Yankees. A team that doesn't belong. I mean, really, nobody figured the Yankees would be this good this year. They're starting pitching. Sonny Gray had a very good performance, and CeCe Sabathia had a very good performance. Their starting pitching does not compare to Houston's.
No, it doesn't.
But if you got to go to the bullpen in Houston's bullpen, they look terrified. The guys he brought in looked terrified.
They all look the same.
Well,
they all look like they're just going to get hit.
Right. Even at 4-2, even down 4-2 in the eighth inning, that building's oddly confident, isn't it? We talked about this, I think it was just yesterday. They know how to do this thing this time of year.
The
something
Yankee
in the DNA.
Fans were chesty?
I'm really surprised they won that game. And now, today on PTI. And we probably won't be able to talk about it because that game starts at 4 today.
Right.
And that is opposite.
You say you're surprised they won the game.
Yankees, yeah.
But
I saw it coming at 4-2.
Right. I'm saying.
Oh, no. The moment I left a message at Michael's house. Michael's out. The Murray team is playing in a tournament today.
The Frogs?
The
Fighting Frogs.
And I left a message saying the Yankees are going to, it was 4-2. The Yankees are going to win this game. They're going
Crazy.
To win this game. You could see it.
I know this happens, but I was watching the end of that game and I don't understand how anyone hits
Chapman.
The ball off of Chapman.
No.
I just don't understand. He's throwing it 101, and then he throws the – I mean, I guess it's a changeup. It's like 90, or maybe hard slider.
You're terrified.
You have to be swinging for the fastball. So when anything than the fastball comes, you miss it by 5 feet.
It's very different from the situation
here. You close
your
eyes, you swing as hard as you can, and you hope to hit the ball.
I just struck, and the socialite will appreciate it. I was just struck watching it by how different it is from the situation here. And just sort of like, how do you just not do whatever it takes to get someone like that when you're as good as a team like, say, the Nationals?
Well, he's special. I know he got hit the other day, and I know he lost the other day.
Well, that happens.
But 20 out of 21, he comes in, and it's over. It's automatic. He's terrifying. It's 101 or 102.
He's huge. Gigantic.
Yeah. So the other game, the Dodgers got 6 1/3 out of Yu Darvish, a late pickup, as was Sonny Gray, as was Justin Verlander. Early in the game, he gives up a home run to Kyle Schwarber.
First inning, right?
Unlikely to be with the Cubs next year because he should be a DH in the American League. That's really his role, and that's probably
like
where he's going to be.
Like Jason Worth, you mean?
Then he settles down, and the Cubs are down 3-0. They're down 3-0, and they're not coming back.
Right? No. Coming back from
they're
that.
Not coming back on this. For Joe Posnanski's theory that Joe Maddon was playing possum in the first 2 days just to get him back to Chicago. So
we're playing Nats took too much out of him.
Nats playing possum. Just wait, we're coming back this year. We showed the Cubs,
Nats
huh?
Nats still impacting the playoffs.
So I asked Jack, did he have anything to say, really? And he said, no, I'm just in mourning for the Nats. You're somebody who was active along with Mark Tui in bringing the club here, and this
Absolutely.
Is a very big deal. What did you how did you react to that, to the way the Nats lost?
Oh, it's such a sinking feeling. I mean, here we are winning 4-1, right?
Yeah.
We got the best pitcher in Major League Baseball coming in relief. Scherzer, sunned him out.
Yeah.
People are going 2 outs.
Well, but you were winning 4-3 because you should have pulled Gio Gonzalez at the end of the second inning.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have even gone out for the third.
But to Jack's point, Scherzer, people forget in that fifth inning, Scherzer gets Bryant and Rizzo before anything else happens. Yeah.
Six pitches, and they're out.
And then, as I was talking to somebody, then it became the best high school baseball game we ever saw.
That's right.
It just was crazy. And one crazy moment after another. And having sat through 3 prior years of the fifth game, I couldn't believe it. We were stunned where I sit. Just stunned that we walked away and lost it again.
My 2 boys went to bed 8-5, went to bed up 4-1.
Yeah.
And when they woke up, it was really fun letting them know that we had lost.
Video that next time.
I thought at the time that the winner of the Cubs and the Nats would beat the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And now, in hindsight, each one of those games was so tense.
That's right.
It took too much. The Cubs are a really good team.
There was no.
They're a good team. Yeah. They're the defending world champions. They had the best record in the National League since the All-Star break, and they're getting beaten. Yeah. They're getting beaten. Yeah. So I'm.
And there was no game like Game 3 of the Yankee Astros series where it's 8-0 in like the fifth inning.
No.
And it's
right.
over.
No.
Right? I mean, there was no even
no.
6-1.
The largest margin game was close and got blown open late.
Right. I mean, there was no. Every game was very taut.
To the seventh inning of every game, mm-hmm. other than Game 5, it was totally tied or very,
won.
Very close.
Yeah.
And in Game 5, it was so chaotic. That I think emotionally, I mean, I think you're seeing it with the Cubs. I think you're seeing it.
Do you think, Tony, that the Nats outcome wouldn't, I mean, I'm not saying they'd be down 3-0, but do you just think the series took too much out of whoever came out of it?
It looks that way to me. And I think the
Dodgers
are better than we thought.
You'd have depleted pitching staff, tired pitching staff. Yeah.
Dodgers are better than we thought. They are. Dodgers are good.
I mean,
because they have 9 or 10 guys or 11 guys. Nobody hits 350, but everybody hits 280.
And we forget too. I mean, prior to obviously they had a really bad period in the sort of the third quarter of the season.
Yeah, that's right.
But prior to that, we're talking about them as one of the best teams ever.
Absolutely.
Best
team in baseball. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get out of here. We will come back. We'll talk more baseball with Richard Justice at some point during the show. We will talk about the NBA Open because of what happened to Gordon Hayward and the Golden State game, which was predictable to me personally. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, this is the MeUndies ad. This is the one that sets this show apart from all the others and that it embarrasses us to some degree. MeUndies makes feel-good undies that your body will be proud to wear. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/Tony K. With tons of styles and patterns to choose from for both men and ladies, MeUndies, you should say men and women. Not men and ladies, men and women, I think you should say, in the copy. MeUndies will have the perfect fit for any personality. Nigel didn't write it. The MeUndies feeling is unmatched because they use a naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. And for a limited time only, check out MeUndies' first ever glow-in-the-dark print, Lights Out. Why not update your underwear drawer and glow at the same time? And if underwear is not your thing, MeUndies also makes the softest socks in the world. We should get the socks. It asked me to tell a story about
MeUndies.
Send
us a box.
Here's my story.
I could use
Send us a big box.
That's not a declarative statement.
It's
that's
cold
an order.
Today. Today it's like 40 degrees walking the dog. Today
was
cold.
Do they make any sweaters? I could use a sweater.
I don't know. Huh. But to get 20% off the best and softest underwear and socks you will ever own, free shipping and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/Tony K. That is MeUndies, MeUndies, MeUndies.com/Tony K.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
On a headset. From the hill, you can see the view. The lights in the city. This is sent in by Jack Branley, who writes, I continue as a loyal little, and I feel a connection to Mr. Tony as I'm the offspring of Jack Sr. from the Upper East Side, Regis High School, and Andrea from Wantagh, Levittown Memorial High School, though my religious affiliation is more Steve Young than Kornheiser. I loved when Mr. Tony said 76er Joel Embiid has not been on the court for the duration of a Mormon mission. This is another submission from my son's band, the National Parks, or if their recently released album, Places. They're on all music platforms. They're currently touring the country. Tour dates are listed in the nationalparksmusic.com. They'll be in Vienna, Virginia tonight at something called Jammin' Java.
Oh, yeah. I've been there.
Have you been there?
I've been there many times.
I don't go to Virginia.
Jammin' Java is where Jerry's Jingle Fest thing is next year.
Okay, so I haven't been there.
Yes. Did you say I don't go to Virginia?
I don't go to
Virginia. Like as a matter of principle?
Unless I'm playing golf.
Got to draw the line somewhere.
It's too far. Anyway, Jack Branley sends us in about his kid. And we play in Richard Justice with this of MLB.com. And Richie is at the Yankees series. And I didn't see the Dodger game in full. But I did see the Yankee game in full. And I will tell you, Richard, I was completely amazed by it to the degree that in the middle of the game, well, not in the middle, when it was 4-2 and the Yankees had two on, I texted Wilbon. I said, this is unbelievable. The Yankees are going to win this game. And he said, what about Gordon Hayward? And I said, what about Gordon Hayward? And he said, you're not watching. I go, no, why would I watch that when I can watch a baseball playoffs? And he said, he just got Theismann'd. He
disgusting. Broke his leg.
So I missed all of that. And the Yankees went on to win. I cannot be more wrong about this. What was it like being there and seeing, you know, the sort of waterfall of the Yankees for, you know, the seventh and the eighth?
Well, I think there was a bad feeling. I think the Astros don't have any confidence in their bullpen right now. It was pretty good for most of the year. It was pretty good at the end of the year. But right now there's been a reason that he's gone to Justin Verlander in the late innings, and he's left Justin Verlander in. He doesn't feel that. It was more interesting after the game in the clubhouse watching what some younger guys felt. How do you go around? What's the look in your eye? How are you going to come out tomorrow? All of that stuff. And that'll be the interesting part. Now, they're 2 games away from winning the American League pennant, and they have Dallas Keuchel today.
Yeah.
And Justin Verlander ready to pitch Game 6 on Friday. If you offer them that choice on the first day of the season, they sign up for it. But there's a gut punch, and, you know, one of the things you always hear in baseball is defeats like this linger in the heart and the mind and all of that stuff. And now you got Aaron Judge going. I mean, he was pretty helpless the first couple of games. And he changes a lot of things, you know. So we'll see. The Astros, who led the majors in runs this year, they're hitting 153 in the series. You got to put your big boy pants on and come back out and play.
Is Keuchel going on full rest?
Yes, he's fine, you know.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, he's not a guy that throws 100 miles an hour. He won the Cy Young 2 years ago. He's got an ERA of like 1.6 in his career against the Yankees. He won the wild card game at Yankee Stadium a couple of years ago. But you have to go do it, and when you don't throw 100, you have to be good. So if there's any nerves or anything like that, if you put a ball in the wrong place to some of these Yankee sluggers, you've got a choice. And, you know, frankly, you know, the Yankees are going to show up today feeling pretty good. One of the things I heard about the wild card game here this year is a lot of Yankee officials mentioned it. It sounded like an old Yankee Stadium crowd. You know, Yankee crowds, Mets crowds really too, when they're going good, there's an edginess and an anger and how dare you, you know, almost a thunderclap. And they had some of that going, and they had certainly had some of that going last night. So, you know, did everything change last night? Well, no today.
I'm willing to believe that everything did change last night, and I'm one of those who thinks that Houston is a better team and that Houston would win this series. I watched Todd Frazier being interviewed after the game, and if I'm not mistaken, Todd Frazier played in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati and St. Louis are widely regarded to be the best baseball towns in America. And Todd Frazier talked exactly what you're talking about, Richard, about the crowd at Yankee Stadium and how right. thrilling it was to play in front of these people. I know Cincinnati hasn't been good, but if you're a Cincinnati guy to some degree and you say that about Yankee Stadium, then that is the reestablishment of the crowd that was there in the beginning of Jeter's with Jeter and Torrey and the core four, don't you think?
Yeah, and the thing I've always noticed, and I know you've been there too, and I say this for Shea Stadium as well, I haven't been at Citi Field when it's been that loud, but when something happens, there's like an instant of complete silence, and then
yeah,
the noise hits you in the face. It's like nothing you've ever heard, and when they get going, they can impact games, and, you know, yeah, it's actually a cool thing to be a part of on either side. I would think, you know, if you're an opposing player, you take a moment to look around and go, you know, this is pretty good. This is what I signed up for.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched a million baseball games, and I'm not going to say I've never seen anything like this, but I rarely have the confidence that a team is going to win a game when they're down two runs with only two innings to go. And you could see it. No matter who the manager put in, it didn't work, and they got the bat on the ball. It's not that they hit it out. I mean, after Judge's home run, it's not that they hit it out. It's just they placed it in the right spots, and the relievers looked terrified out there. They did, Richard. They looked terrified.
Yeah, and that's the lingering question going forward. Now, if you have a lead, if you get seven innings out of Keuchel, what do you do now? You know, and A.J. Hinch said last night, I mean, he is great at setting the right tone. He's had a perfect three seasons with this team. He said last night, hey, look, nobody's losing their job over this. We're still going to go out and give the ball to those guys. You may still do that, but you don't have any confidence about it. So in a postseason when the managers have had, you know, annoyingly short leashes with their starting pitchers, he's going to have to go as far as he can with his guys because he's not sure. You know, this guy, Chris Davinsky, Tony, he made the All-Star team. This guy, Will Harris, made the All-Star team last year. Ken Giles is a pretty good closer.
Not last night. All three got tagged.
Right.
All three.
And they have this guy, Joe Musgrove, who converted, and he'd been great in the second half. I mean, dominant, 95-mile-an-hour stuff. And right now, they're all in a place where they can't get anyone out.
Yeah. So one of the things that was talked about very widely before this series was the possibility that Joe Girardi would not be back, either of his own volition or somebody else's. You are always on the record as saying that the Yankees don't pull the trigger that quickly, and you expected him to be back. If he did not want to be back, he'd now be in a position to go wherever he wants. Do you have any sense that Girardi does not want to be back?
No, I have a sense that he does want to be back, and he wants to be the manager of the New York Yankees. The Yankees, you remember what the Yankees were like under George Steinbrenner?
Yes, very well.
To the moment.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. It's totally the opposite under Hal Steinbrenner. They are the most stable organization going. They may be the smartest organization going in terms of data and collecting data and stability and all of this stuff. And the general manager, Brian Cashman, and the owner are on the same page. And Girardi's part of that. You know,
okay.
He annoys the New York media because he never reveals very much of his plan or of himself. But, you know, Joe Torrey changed the Yankees in that he kept all the noise, all the tabloid noise, all the talk show noise, out in the hall. He made it normal. And that's what Girardi has done. And if you manage here, that's what you have to do.
I wanted to – I'll get to this question, the overall question, before the specifics of you, Darvish, having such a good game last night. Sonny Gray had a very good game last night. Justin Verlander had a spectacular game in Game 2 of this particular series. These were the three names that were floated out there around the trade deadline and a little bit afterwards, because you can still make deals. In your mind, who's the best acquisition of those three? Because all three have been very good.
Yeah, Verlander hasn't lost. He's been phenomenal. You know, and it was harder to get him. They didn't get him until, not the trade
deadline.
Way
late. Yeah.
Yeah, but the August 31st deadline. But Darvish has been just what they wanted. You know, they wanted a right-handed pitcher to put in there with all those left-handers, and a guy, you know, Clayton Kershaw, Rich Hill, those guys, they are stuff guys, but it's more location. Darvish is just nasty. He throws a slider that will shatter your bat into a million pieces. And when you have a guy like that, a big, tall guy like that, there's a fear factor involved. And I think on a mostly finesse staff, they thought he would be perfect. And he struggled some down the stretch. He was lined up to pitch second. He ends up pitching third because they were a little less sure of him. And he's been phenomenal.
So the story du jour yesterday was that Joe Posnanski, your colleague and wonderful writer, advanced the theory that that Joe Maddon was willing to go to 0-2 because he felt that he could win 4 out of 5 and he wanted to get back to Chicago, and everything was geared with that. Certainly Game 1, nobody expected them to win. But in Game 2, with the opportunity to put his closer in Wade Davis, admittedly in a tie game, he didn't do it. He went to John Lackey and he lost. Do you believe the Posnanski theory, and those people who do, what exactly are they thinking now? Now it's 3-0.
Yeah, they're not thinking that.
Yeah.
Well, I think he did want to give his team, you know, it took them 22 hours or something to get.
Yeah, they were stuck in Albuquerque for a while, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good place to be stuck, you know,
yep.
Winslow, Arizona.
Yeah.
I think he did need to give his team a chance to catch its breath and reset and get its emotional energy back. But no, I don't think he wanted to go too. I think he was competing like hell to win every game, and he just didn't make the right bullpen moves in Game 2. I think this is the first time. You know, he got roasted pretty good last year.
On Chapman.
But at the end of the day, he had a ring to say, how do you like this?
Right,
this
that's right.
Look to you?
That's right.
And this is the first time, you know, it's really been called into question. But look, I know Joe well. He's a big boy. He can take it. And no manager sets a tone better than Joe Maddon. And, you know, we're talking about, hey, what are the Astros saying when they come to work today? Joe will have it exactly right. I'll tell you a quick story. When Joe was on Mike Socia's staff, the Angels were going bad, and Mike, you know, the feeling was more batting practice, more this, more that. And Maddon would say, no, Mike, let's have them show up an hour before the game. It's a mental break they need. It's not more physical work. And the other coaches on the staff said, yeah, that's a great idea. No, early batting practice. But that's Joe. He's always been different, and it's always worked.
There are a couple of questions about the Dodgers who I think we agree look like they're going to win this thing. Yep. One is about Clayton Kershaw that we talk about all the time. Why can't he dominate postseason the way he does regular season? But the more pressing question is, where was Justin Turner before the Dodgers? And what didn't he show in how many plays? You know, how did this happen?
And Chris Taylor. I mean,
yes.
They have a...
Yeah, there but Justin Turner is, was, because of the right. look, it's a little bit different. Yeah,
there was a point during the season where if you filled out your National League MVP ballot, you could put Rendon on there and, you know, a few other guys, but it was going to be half Dodgers. It was going to be Bellinger, a rookie. It was going to be Corey Seager, the young shortstop, and it was going to be Turner. He remade his swing. He put this kick in it. He managed to stay healthy. And it's not just that he's a great offensive player. He plays third base like a dream. And it's just part of what they do there, part of what they – one of the things Andrew Friedman's teams – he's the general manager.
Right. He was at Tampa Bay with Matt.
Yes. One of the things they said in Tampa was, you know, we see – they would say off the record, we see things others don't see. They saw it. Chris Taylor remade his swing last year, became a great player. And Turner, they managed to keep him on the field. Now, he was hurt some this year. I mean, he is as important as any player in the National League. How did this happen?
Yeah.
I have I have no idea.
He got cut by a lot of teams.
Yes, he would tell you it's mechanics and all that. And so when people say that, tell you the Dodgers spend $800 million, you remind them that Justin Turner was a nobody, that Chris Taylor was a nobody, that Cody Bellinger was making the minimum, that Corey Seager was making close to the minimum. I mean, they are very smart.
They must be. And, I mean, I know baseball is not really the national sport it once was, but a Yankee-Dodger World Series, you'd have to think if you're Fox and you have a Yankee-Dodger World Series.
We're going to have to hear about Roger Kahn and Carl Farrell.
I know. I know. Forever and ever. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Tony.
Richard Justice of MLB.com. We will take a break. When we return, Nigel will do the news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad. Everybody here working on the show has the Harry's razors. Everybody is happy with them. It asks for a personal endorsement to take some time to talk about your experience with Harry's. Here's my experience. I use it. It's fine. I'm happy with it. It's good. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades. They'll give you their trial set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/TonyK. All you have to do is pay for shipping. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, who still claim to be two ordinary guys, say they were fed up with buying overpriced razors. They're not ordinary anymore. They started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own German factory with over 100 years of blade-making experience to ensure the highest quality. All the products are backed by 100% quality guarantee. Harry's offers their blades at half the price to the leading five-blade razor selling directly to you over the Internet. To claim your free trial offer from Harry's today, which is a $13 value, and you get it for free if you cover shipping, here's what you get. A weighted ergonomic razor handle, five precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel that I add parenthetically smells good, and a travel blade cover. To get your free trial set, here's what you do. Go to Harry's, HARRYS.com/TonyK right now. That's Harry's.com/TonyK.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This tune comes from Tim Brightwell in Auckland, New Zealand.
Oh, what a
and
nice
you think,
name.
Wow.
Brightwell.
We've got people in New Zealand. We got somebody right here today at Chatter from Australia.
That's right.
Who
wow.
recognized the licorice that was sent to me. Here's the email. Here's a tune, A Sunny Day in Milwaukee, written and performed live by my younger brother, Nick Brightwell, a fingerstyle guitarist from New Zealand. I thought today would be the day to send it after watching Rodgers and the Packers go down in a crumbling heap. Nick, a Kiwi, is a proud grad of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and spent his first years in the great state watching a certain former quarterback wearing the purple and gold and still has photos from walking down the middle of the street with a sled and a case of Pabst Blue Ribbon the night of the Super Bowl win. You can find out more about him, his upcoming shows, and preview of his upcoming album at nickbrightwell.com. And since Michael isn't here today, Nigel, when people want to send us good music like this, that you can listen to at the end of the show in full, how do they do it?
You can send it to jingles at tonykornheisershow.com. We love to hear your original songs. Please send us that. Also, if you'd like to get involved in a podcast, you can do so at tonykornheisershow.com. Just get in touch with us through that, and we'd love to house your podcast.
Who's talking about doing a podcast here?
Who's that?
John Carl and Rick Klein at ABC.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They do
a podcast, and yeah. I'm trying to get them to come up here. Rick Klein lives in the neighborhood. Carl lives in Virginia, but he's got to go somewhere.
That would be great.
Yes, I think so. If anybody sees them on the street,
either
John Carl or Rick Klein, tell them to do the podcast.
Nigel and
I were talking about doing our Jack the Ripper podcast.
Yeah, Saucy Jack.
Yeah, still got potential.
Do you have some news?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. You referenced it earlier in the show, the start of the NBA. Everything was sort of overshadowed
by... Wilbon jacked up.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, he loves the NBA.
Yeah, well, they pay him.
The association.
The association.
Yeah. I mean, he gets paid. Part of his duties are to cover it.
Two games, Cleveland beats Boston and Houston beats Golden State, but everything's sort of overshadowed by the horrific injury to Gordon Hayward.
Wilbon texted me, said it's Theismann.
It's disgusting.
Worse.
It was worse. I think
you thought it was worse.
Yeah, because it was right out there.
I will tell you.
You could see it.
I'll
all.
Tell you why it is worse. To Chris's point, that's number two. Number one is, and I hasten to even say this because I feel like it's encouraging people to go back and watch it again, which no one should ever do.
Don't
it's
watch
disgusting.
It. Don't watch it.
But if you choose to, you can hear clear
oh,
as
really?
Day.
Yeah,
bone breaking.
You can hear that bone snap, and it is disgusting. Disgusting.
Gordon Hayward waited 5 years to reunite with Brad Stevens, who coached him at Butler, to the national championship game. It is Gordon Hayward's shot. that hit back iron, had that gone in and beaten Duke, it would be the most famous play in the history of basketball. He played 5 minutes and 15 seconds. I assume, well, it's a very, very long season, but I assume he's out for the year. Yeah, it's a broken ankle and a broken leg.
Was it dislocated?
Dislocated ankle.
With presumably ligament damage, the way that thing was.
Well, they said at this point that it's a clean break with none of those sort of things associated with it.
But one would still
expect
a great outpouring from professional athletes all over the country.
OBJ, JJ Watt.
Yeah.
Is it grosser than
Paul George's injury?
That Paul George injury was gruesome.
Well, to me, Ware was the worst.
That was the worst.
That was a whole year.
I think everyone expects him. Now, what does this do for the Celtics, Mr. Tony? Does this sort of derail their plans?
Yes, of course it does. Yep. Their two big acquisitions are both all-stars. Kyrie Irving, who, by the way, missed a three at the buzzer that would have sent the game into overtime and got booed lustily and should have been.
Should have been there.
And Gordon Hayward. Brad Stevens is a really good coach. They also lost two guys who were very important to the team. They lost Avery Bradley and who am I blanking?
Jay Crowder,
who's now starting for Cleveland.
Yep. Right.
They're very important. I think it sinks them. I mean, if you're a Wizards fan...
Well, when you say sinks, they can't fall out of the playoffs.
No, but I think if you're a Wizards fan, you think, whoa,
right.
We just moved up one.
Okay, but maybe it sinks them to four or five or even six.
The East is terrible,
the guy is... coming back in,
I don't know,
6 months.
That was
rough. Who knows if it's a clean break?
That was rough.
Maybe Nigel, you're going to get there. But the other piece of NBA news yesterday, which was kind of weird.
Yeah, the Bulls.
Prior to that, was the deal with Bobby Portis.
There was a practice with the Bulls and Nikola Mirotic. Am I pronouncing
Mirotic?
Mirotic.
Pretty good player.
He was starting. Yeah, he averaged, I think,
got a lot of Rookie of the Year votes a couple of years ago.
Just over 10 points and over 5 rebounds per season. Apparently, he was battling with a guy named
Bobby Portis
for the starting position, and they were battling in practice. And I guess.
And battling is the right word.
Yeah, came at him a couple times, and then Portis, the third time, just punched him right in the face, broke his jaw, gave him a concussion.
I mean, he broke bones in his face. Guy had surgery,
the
allegedly.
Chicago Bulls statement on this, the wording of the statement, Chicago Bulls forwards Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic had a physical altercation during today's practice. As a result of the incident, Mirotic suffered a concussion and maxillary fractures. What? Surgery is likely required. Mirotic is out indefinitely.
Broke bones in his face.
What's going to happen to Portis?
They said they're evaluating disciplinary action.
He's going to start now.
I mean, they got to suspend him, right? What happened to Michael Westbrook and Stephen Davis? Remember that thing here?
When Davis punched him?
You got to suspend
Westbrook punched him. Was he suspended? I don't know.
Gary and I mostly just slap fight.
I don't know.
Yeah, did somebody break something with Jordan when Jordan was on one of his comebacks? Was it Oak? No, it wasn't Oakley.
I don't remember Jordan ever getting
it. Jordan hit Steve Kerr in the mouth.
Yeah,
in practice.
Did he?
Yeah, in the mouth in practice.
Didn't smash his face. I mean, this is a punch that concussed him, and
he was on the ground for several minutes before he got up.
Not
a great day for the NBA.
If you're the Chicago Bulls, do you really want to punish the guy? I mean, then you're down two starters. Then you're down two. Yeah. I don't know.
Don't do it again, but you're starting now.
Yeah.
It's like when Blake Griffin, you got to punch the trainer. You don't punch another guy on the team.
Right.
To the NFL, Mr. Tony, we'll start with Zeke Elliott. He was granted another legal reprieve.
Good God.
They gave him a temporary restraining order, blocking the league's suspension.
It's
clearing him to play Sunday at San Francisco.
He will be suspended at some point, but not, apparently this is not on the docket till 2 weeks from now.
Right, because the judge is on vacation.
So he will play this week.
Yes, he ordered the league to appear before this judge, Catherine Polk of Failure. By October 30th to argue why
the
suspension should not be blocked.
Aren't you finding out where this judge is vacationing and just extending it? Just saying, hey, have another month on us.
Yes, yeah, here's money. Stay. Yeah.
And the owners did meet with the players yesterday in New York.
This is important.
Yes, and after that, Goodell said the league did not ask for any changes to the policy on the national anthem. He said, we did not ask for it. We spent today talking about the issues players are trying to bring attention to, issues in our communities, to make our communities better. And everybody seemed to come out of that saying it was a good meeting.
This is a sports show, in essence, and so in sports you deal with W's and L's. This was a very big win for the NFL senior management people yesterday, and the smartest thing they did was not come out with any policy whatsoever on the national anthem. We will find out tomorrow night what effect, if any, this has on people kneeling during the anthem, because there is a Thursday night game, and we'll find out more on Sunday. But when you have players who are leading what is sort of like a revolution in a league where players have no power, this is not the NBA, players have no power in the NFL whatsoever. When you have leaders of that group coming out of a meeting saying, this was really good, we had open dialogue, we feel good about this, then that looks like a win for the NFL and also for the players. The players may not have explicit power, but they have implicit power now. Once you invite people to the table, you cannot disinvite them from the table the next time something big right. comes up. I think the loser in this is Colin Kaepernick. I think Colin Kaepernick was invited by the players to be part of this. He declined. His attorney, his celebrity attorney, made it clear he wasn't invited by the league. The league was never going to invite him. The players invited him, and he declined. I don't know who he listens to. I don't know anything about Colin Kaepernick, but what will happen down the road is he will become a footnote to this. Players will be able to realize actual gains. They will give credit to Colin Kaepernick, but he will get nothing more than that, and there will be sort of a stampede over him because the league understands now that they're going to have to share power. Tell me where I'm wrong in that analysis.
No, I wonder if he sort of, although... I mean, Kurt Flood in some ways is a little bit
very
forgotten
important.
To history, but hugely important.
Yes.
I mean, if you ask...
Well, you're not suggesting Colin Kaepernick would be forgotten to history.
No, but he's sort of overshadowed in the long
run. I think he missed the opportunity to be out front on this thing. I think he missed that. And now he has to depend on the goodwill of others, which is hard to do.
I'll counterpoint, and I quote... The NFL has decided that it will not force players to stand up for the playing of our national anthem. Total disrespect for our great country, John Trump.
Okay, well, that's that. What else?
The Michelin Guide is out with its rankings for restaurants.
In D.C.
Yes, in D.C.
Chatter?
Chatter?
Can I hear a chatter?
We got hosed.
What? Yes,
we did not.
Not even one star.
Did you get a Goodyear
rating? I thought we'd get two, but we didn't even get
one. Maybe a Goodyear
rating? Some of the ones that just beat out Chatter.
Comey, where I've eaten,
Chipotle,
got a star.
Chipotle
did not get.
No, Comey and Metier were awarded one star joining the ranks.
And the restaurant guy's upset that Rasika didn't get one, and I'm upset Chatter didn't get one.
Seatsima's irate.
Yeah, he is.
Yes, and there's still...
Love Seatsima, by the way. Awesome guy.
Is he?
Yeah, I guess the best. Four with two stars, still no three-star restaurants in town, and three is
Pineapple Princess got two again.
Yeah, Pineapple Pearls.
But Rose's Luxury did not get two, they got one.
Yes. What did Minibar get?
Minibar still has two.
Seatsima very upset about all sorts of foreign-based restaurants, foreign food-based restaurants that he loves... Not getting stars. Well, we're an American restaurant. We should get a
nationalist,
star.
Nationalist restaurant
got,
movement.
Who's got better breakfast than we got?
Right.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody's got
bacon.
We got bacon.
Yeah, that's right.
Great bacon.
What else?
Actually, great sausage patties, too. Bob brought them in.
They were
other
great.
Day. Yeah.
We've got another story of appalling customer service within airlines, Mr. Tony.
Well, it's not appalling. It's just a lack of knowledge.
No, some of the comments, if they are accurate, are absolutely appalling.
Share the story, Nigel.
This is involving Canadian-born curler Erin McEnroe Savage, or McEnroe Savage.
She's a curler.
She's a curler for Canada. And she was approaching an American Airlines flight and was going to check her bag with her curling sticks in it.
Brooms.
I guess they're called brooms. I'm not a curler.
They're brooms.
Too big, I'm guessing.
Well, he said, yeah, you've got to check it under, it's not in the $25 range. You're going to have to pay $150 for that. And she said, and I guess it...
This is my equipment, my sporting equipment.
Yeah, it was over what should be allowed for sporting equipment. It said, no, that's not... Curling's not a sport.
Oh.
Well,
wow.
Okay,
right
to get...
Is that in... Are you quoting now?
Yes, this is what Savage said.
Well, this is what...
The agent said, curling isn't sport. She said, I told her it's in the Olympics.
There's context to this, though. And here is the context. This is at Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix. They got no idea what curling is in Phoenix. They have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, not to paint with too broad a brush, but in Phoenix, they don't know.
They don't know. They don't know. They don't have no ice in Phoenix except in martini glasses.
McEnroe Savage said, the agent said it wasn't an elite sport like golf. And then Savage said, well, I would agree
with that.
I'll give you a history lesson about curling's origins, as well as offering to demonstrate how the brooms work by unpacking them. The agent only relented slightly. The agent tried to charge her the oversized sports equipment fee of $150, setting rules about standard sports equipment luggage size that limits it to these, size and weight. She readjusted stuff and duct taped stuff to get it under those limits. And finally, the agent agreed to allow her to pay the 25 cents.
What are you talking about?
But here's why it goes over the line. Savage said the agent ended their exchange by telling her, "I hope you never fly American Airlines again."
Oh, that's a mistake.
If that is true, that is utterly appalling.
That's a mistake. I have a friend at American Airlines, Kent Powell.
I'm sure the feeling is mutual.
And I think Kent would have handled this better. I know Kent would have handled this better.
Yes.
That's a mistake to say, well, I hope you never fly again.
That agent needs to be disciplined.
Now, American Airlines has said, is disputing all the details of this. They should never said that.
I think that that agent is probably in a worse position than Bobby Portis at this point.
That's right.
Because they don't need that agent. Yeah, and Bobby Portis is a starter in the NBA.
He's an NBA starter.
Well, I have a lot of experience with excess baggage fees because in my video production business, we're frequently traveling with big, heavy cases. I mean, this is the same when you guys take your show on the road. And I didn't know, I mean, I've traveled with golf clubs and stuff. I didn't know there were like special allowances for sporting equipment.
I didn't either.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I know there were size and weight.
I will say this on a positive note for United Airlines. I'd like to give them a plug because
I like United Airlines. Jeannie Valentino's United Airlines and Kent Powell and Anthony Black is Delta. So I'm good with all the airlines.
Yes.
In my flight out to San Francisco this past weekend,
humble brag.
Halfway out there, my connecting flight was canceled. Right. And so I was booked on another flight.
You
it was
were
much
in the
later.
Air when you learned that your connection was canceled.
So I got to the ground and I was booked on another flight that was going to be much later. But I saw a flight was boarding about 15 minutes all the way across the airport. I got there, the door was closed, and I look utterly crestfallen. And the gate agent said, "Can I help you?" I said, "I was really just hoping I could get on that flight. Do you mind?" She's like, "Do you mind a middle seat?" I said, "No." They opened up the door. I got in. I was the last person
on
the plane.
You can't take a middle seat.
I did take a middle seat.
I would have been like, "I'm fine."
You have to say, "Look.
Move someone
for me. Hey, do you know who I am?
Yeah, right. Isn't there someone you can drag off?"
Yeah. I was bleeding.
I was in the middle seat, and there was two children who it seemed as if
kicking
the guy's seat next to me. He was so agitated. I thought he was going to snap.
Wait, you were in between two kids?
No. They were on the aisle next to me.
Did you discipline them?
They screamed bloody murder the entire time. I couldn't turn the volume
up. And you were okay in the village?
I was okay with it because I got there actually earlier than I was originally.
Several hours.
Okay. Did you take a shower immediately afterward?
I did, yes.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have Old Guy Radio, and we think that Adam Ferrara is going to join us during Old Guy Radio.
Standing by.
Fantastic. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio. Nigel should explain who this is and when it happened.
This is
we know when it happened. BC.
This is three lads, John, Paul, and George, the first original song, I believe, recorded by them. It's called "In Spite of All the Danger," recorded in the summer of 1958. We play this because on this date, 1957, was the first time Paul and John played together
60 years ago
as part of the Quarrymen. Now, they had met earlier in the summer when John was leading the band, the Quarrymen, at a church party, and Paul met him after that, and shortly thereafter was part of the band, a lot because after the show, Paul showed John that he could play a song called 20 Flight Rock. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
Eddie Cochran, he could play it brilliantly, and John was like, this guy could actually make the band better. So he joined the band, and then shortly after the new year, George joined the band after auditioning on the top of a double-decker bus playing Raunchy, and this was the beginning of the Beatles.
That's amazing.
So if they don't meet, we don't have all that.
Right. And this is recorded in
And what we have instead is the Archies.
Yes.
That's what we have. We have the Archies.
I could have used more Ringo in that tune.
Ringo not with him. No. Yeah, not with him then. Not with him at that point.
Their first drummer was Pete Best.
Yes, that's right. God. And I don't think he was even part of this. It's just the three
of them. No, there's no percussion.
It's like you pull a curtain back and you make a recording. And that was that. They were also recorded "That Will Be the Day." But these were the
Buddy Holly songs.
Yes, these are the first two. So there you go.
Adam Ferrara joins us now. Are you playing? Are you in? Before we start the actual conversation, are you playing someplace in Washington that we could plug?
First of all, I want to thank the Beatles for opening for me. That's my segment. I'm playing at the DC Improv, but I'm not going to be there till November 2nd. I'm there 2 through 5.
Well, that's only in a couple of weeks. It's not that long away.
Adam, it's Gary. I'm out of town that weekend, but the second is a Thursday. Is that right?
That's right.
It is. Yeah, I'm doing the Thursday through the Sunday, and Nigel's going to come down and open for me again because it wouldn't be a party without Nigel.
Well, that's going to say I'll come see you, but now knowing that,
Adam, I don't know about
yikes.
That.
All right, what's doing? What do you got? As Jimmy Breslin would say when he called, what's doing?
Well, what Stu was, I wanted to call, because I haven't spoken to you for a while, and I heard you talking about Roethlisberger, and I had the same thought that, you know, he's the one that said he might retire.
Yes.
And then he's on the year-to-year thing. And then in the press conference, he goes, I don't know if I have it anymore. And then when the press asked him, well, had you got your confidence back? He goes, you know, you guys have to stop pushing me around. But you lit the fire, and you're accusing us of arson. What are you
yeah.
doing?
He's an unbelievable diva. He does this all the time. All the time.
But then, and I don't know what's at the end of it, like when he said, after they won the game, they beat Kansas City. Thank you very much, because I took Kansas City. But he beat Kansas City. And then he's like, I guess this old cowboy's got one more ride in him. Hey, hop along, Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
Move your way now.
He loves to dramatize his life.
He's a total diva.
And, like, he's always, like, grievously injured in the second quarter, and then, like, five plays later, he's back in the game.
I mean, he's back, and he's getting hit. Yeah.
It's like he's like the guy in the war movies. Like, he takes one in the leg, go on without me. Save yourself. Remember to tell him about Wild Bill Roethlisberger. You know, stop it.
But I would suggest to you that as a Jets fan, you would rather have him flaws and all than anybody you've had in the past 10 years.
Yes. Apparently, the defensive line has taken a vow of silence this year. We have noticed that.
Yeah.
And did you see the call? Now, everyone says it's the right call, but it's a bad rule. But
yes.
The thing is, it happens to the Jets. That's the thing that happens. They should just change their name to the Schlepprock. Oh, look, the cloud is over MetLife Stadium. They're home this week. It's just everything crumbles around them. And I can't. My buddy was out here at Simi Valley, and he got the Jet game as the early game. And he called me at the first half, and he's like, they look good. I go, wait, this is the manic phase.
Yeah.
It's the pressure phase.
That's where they lure you in.
The pressure phase starts in the second half. Yeah. The Jet spirit animal is a bipolar bear. That's it. They just break your heart.
That's funny. I like that. I like that. Do you?
I wanted to ask you about the. I want to ask you about Chessie. I heard something about the spider when you walk the dog.
Yeah. Mm. So down the block and around the corner, because for reasons that I don't understand, America has turned into a pagan country and has more Halloween lights than any other than Christmas, and they start about a month early. This house, in front of this house, is a spider, a rubberized spider, I guess, a mechanical rubberized spider, where the head moves. It's motion activated, and the head moves, and the eyes glow, and it scared the dog. And I understand that. It really scared the dog, and I don't know what to do about it. I mean, I would let the dog loose to eat the thing, but the dog's afraid of it. And I now, in the last three mornings, Adam, I've stopped walking down that side of the street. I've stopped.
I was gonna. Yeah, that's an option to you. So, and the dog is fine with it. But it just enjoy walking the dog, because mine's going blind, my little dog.
Oh,
I had to have, So when I was like, my heart's breaking right now, and I had to have the surgery. She got cataracts.
Right.
And so I bring her in for this, and I brought my mother in for her cataracts. My mother's cataract surgery was cheaper than the dog.
Did you have your mother do it with a vet, or did you have a real eye doctor?
Look, I tried to get a deal. They wouldn't do it.
Two for one.
Yeah. Okay.
But so my mother's was cheaper. And here's the ironic thing. The dog can drive at night. Now my mother can't. So she's out here, and the surgery went. She got glaucoma after that, so she can't see anything. So, but living in California, we can get weed biscuits.
Right.
So my dog is high because the weed helps with the glaucoma to release the pressure. So my wife has put little bells around her jeans, and she's walking around the house so the dog can hear the bells. And she's following them around the house, and the dog is just behind her high, just walking around the house. You know, just like Snoop, just like bow, wow, wow, yippee-yaw, yippee-yaw.
Wait, but I have a question. Okay, so your wife is wearing bells so the dog is comfortable, but what happens if the good humor man comes down the street and the dog hears it? You lose the dog for the rest of time.
Well, we have to keep the doors closed. But that's the way the dog is functioning. So I wanted to let you know, as far as the dog goes, enjoy your dog while you can, because this is the first time. I never had a dog before because my father was allergic. So I got the wife, I got the dog, and now the dog is not doing well, and my heart's breaking, and I can't do it.
I understand that, because you pets are often better than children. Better.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't argue, and they love you, and, you know, they don't say things like, I need a stipend every month, because my job's not going well.
I need new golf clubs.
Yeah, they don't say that.
Yeah. I don't have to pay for my dog's cell phone.
No, you don't have to do that. On the other hand, as you correctly point out, People in this culture have the ability to get insurance a lot easier than animals, and those operations for animals or anything you need for animals, that's shkreli. You know, that's so much money.
And they prey upon your emotions with the animals.
Yep. So, well, if you want the animal to die, then don't have the surgery.
Right.
I mean, they just emotional.
I brought the dog in. The lady says, okay, we've run some tests. The muscle that holds the dog's lens in place is ruptured. It's underneath the cataract. I can correct it with surgery. It's expensive surgery. And if you choose not to have it, the pressure's going to build up, and she'll be blinded at an eye in about 6 hours. Let me know what you want to do.
So true.
Right. That is right. Exactly how it goes.
When I was buying car seats for my first kid, they were like, well, this one is, you know, it's $250. It's pretty safe. And this one's $700. I mean, it's obviously going to give you better care for your child. I mean, it's just setting you up for a, like, well, if you love your child, your child will die if you get this one.
Right.
But it's fine. You want to save a couple bucks, jerk. It's just unbelievable.
They shame it's like going into a Jiffy Lube, and they bring the filter out and they shame you. Like, look at this. Look at how did you let this get this way?
Yeah. Right. Can I ask a car question? Because I know that cars are a big deal in your life.
Yes. Go ahead.
And especially in California.
Is this about your engine light being on?
No, it's not about that. But I'm noticing as I walk around and drive around, I'm noticing more Teslas. And yeah. I'm sort of, I don't know what Teslas are. I wonder, are Teslas just the snob appeal car to very, very rich people, or are they actually really good, and do they have a place in our lives?
Yeah, they're high-end electric cars. So it's not like a hybrid where you can fill it up with gas. You got to plug this thing in.
Right.
And it's about $1.50. And the electric car, so it's instant torque. I mean, you just step on the gas and you're gone.
Right.
But they're real quiet. They make no road noise. They are dangerous because you could probably kill a blind guy in it because they don't make any noise.
Right.
Tony, I was kidding. I was kidding.
No, but they don't make any noise. So if you are like 90% of the people under the age of 35, and everywhere you go, you have your head in a phone and you have earbuds in, and you step off the curb, a Tesla can take you out.
Yeah, well, we got to thin the herd.
So it's Darwinism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you?
But I've driven them. They're quick. There's the 190D, which is like their sport model. It's just like that instant torque. It just takes up off the line, but you can go about 300 miles an hour before you got to recharge it again. So you can't really use it as a first car.
Right.
And it's kind of a status symbol out here because, you know, look, I'm doing something for the environment and I still look good. You know?
Right, right. That's what I thought. I wondered if...
But you're seeing more and more of those charging stations. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the ones I'm seeing are like for Chevy Volts and wouldn't work with Teslas. I would leave that to you, Adam.
Look, eventually they're going to get there, and eventually you're going to be able to... So you're going to be able to use them as, I don't know if you'd be able to use a primary vehicle, but you will be able to use them a lot more than you can use them now. You know,
he's working on a better battery.
But $150,000 for a second car seems, it seems like that's a very small market out there, right?
Well, if they have the money, they're driving around in those kind of cars anyway. I mean, there's people out here with two S-Class Mercedes. And stuff, and if you're seeing them in D.C., I mean, they're fun. I've driven them. There's self-driving ones, too. There's a feature where you can just turn it on, and it's driving itself, and you see it brake and everything. That's kind of freaky.
Yeah.
But you can actually do that, too. There's going to be drive-by-wire, too. Drive-by-wire, you're just going to drive in, hook your car up to the grid, and just sit. And then the car's going to just go wherever you want it to go.
It's just like Minority Report.
I like to drive. Yeah. I enjoy
I like
driving still.
Not me.
Even
I
at
like
my
to
age.
Drive, too.
All right.
Yeah, I enjoy to drive, and I don't use Uber much. I had a guy pick me up in an Uber yesterday, clearly high.
Yeah.
This guy just pulled up and went, dude, yes, I'm dude. And I asked him, I actually said, are you high? And he started laughing. He's like, no. I said, right. I wasn't letting him, I drove his car home. Tony,
get in the back.
That's funny.
He's in the passenger seat. I go, put your belt on. And he's like, oh, you're nice. And we had a nice drive home. And then I realized I don't want him to know where I live. So I pulled over 2 blocks before I got in front of a Krispy Kreme, and I got out. And he's like, dude, you live here?
I'm not a fan of those services, especially since they get in the right lane, and they're not like cabs, and they're not clearly delineated, and all of a sudden you're stopped, and you go, what is going on here? And it's some dope in an Uber.
Uber Black. We talked about this. Get an Uber Black. It's a nice luxury car.
It's like a town car.
That way you don't have to worry about like some guy in a Datsun picking you up. Right. Like,
I don't want to sit in those cars.
No, Uber Black. Uber Black is only like Escalades and town cars and stuff.
Yeah.
That's what you need to roll with if you ever take Uber.
Adam, are you recording? Nigel said you're recording an album. Have you done it?
I did. I finished recording the album. Now I'm editing it right now. So I will let you know when it's out. The working title is right now, It's Funny Until Somebody Loses an Eye.
The Chicago Bulls are thinking that right now with Mirotic. Yes. So.
And where are you? Are you anywhere else before you're out here? We're worldwide, this podcast thing.
I'm at the Comedy and Magic Club on Tuesday. And then I got to go see my mother, and then I'm coming to D.C. And my mother says hello. I sent her the podcast. I played it for her. I couldn't send it to her. I had to push play and sit it down, but she enjoyed listening to you.
I appreciate that. My
father died 7 years ago. My mother's convinced my father is a ghost, and the ghost is not talking to her because he's upset with her.
It's a bad way to go through.
I'm not making it up. I call her every Sunday at halftime. I call her. I go, Ma, how you doing? I'm fine. I think your father's well. He's still pouting. Like, I'm going to be the one to apologize. You're the one that died on me, Joe!
That's funny.
When I go home, I play your podcast, and she enjoyed it, so I thank you.
That's wonderful. So we'll see you when you come to town.
Look forward to it, my friend.
Fabulous. Thank you, Adam. Adam Ferrara, boys and girls. It's a pleasure to have him on. Makes us laugh.
Very funny.
Makes everybody laugh, actually. We will take a break. We will come back with emails and jingles. Yes, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The legend lives on from the bayou on down of James Carville's secret expert picker. Smokes cool cigarettes and drinks genuine draft. Has no fixed address but picks winners. 10-point dog on the road. This man somehow knows that them Vegas boys are out to screw ya. His reasoning shrewd, Carville always pursues the picks of hot hand Spazgula.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
The secret spin killed Luke Russert. Let it spill the existence of Hot Hand Spazgula.
Steve Lipton in Springfield, Virginia, who writes, James Carville has been keeping the source of his extensive football betting system to himself for upwards of 3 decades, and Luke has no problem outing Hot Hand Spazgula like he works for TMZ. I mean, Hot Hands owes people money. Moose, Rocco, help Mr. Spazgula find his checkbook. On the plus side, Nigel now has some walk-up music for this week's appearance by James. Let's hope he didn't have to get this week's prognostication advice from the guy at the daiquiri store. And that's what Luke was talking
about.
Way
to get Spazgula into us. That's not easy.
Yes. Before we get to the mailbag, I want to say thank you to Richard Justice of MLB.com and to actor and comedian Adam Ferrara for coming on the show. I'd like to thank our sponsors today, Harry's Razors, MeUndies. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Nigel has given me email that Michael has recommended, or you did it yourself?
New York Times recommended these.
Ooh. It's a disaster then.
Sounds good.
Dennis McCann in Bayfield, Wisconsin. I emailed last week about my first ever hole-in-one at Sand Valley in Wisconsin after more than 50 years of playing golf, but you declined to share it with your worldwide audience. Giving you the benefit of the doubt, I think gatekeeper Michael wouldn't pass it on because projecting here, maybe he's never had one. He has never had one. That's fine. I understand millennial insecurity, but I was really hoping to let my longtime editor, Marty Kaiser, who we know listens to your show, know that I finally got an ace. We talked about Marty 2 days ago. Even if you don't want to share my accomplishment with the pod world, would you please let Marty know? Well, I shared it with everybody at that point.
Yes.
Benjamin Brunner in Easton, Maryland. 4 hands, 3 pots, orange man, blue apron. Okay.
Okay. See what he
got
there.
See, Jordan, I get it.
Yes. Jordan in Annapolis. Jordan Gerke, I think it is. My aunt and uncle were on Delta Flight 2468 yesterday.
Ooh.
Wow. What you'd like to know, tell
That's
Michael.
That's a good flight, yes.
This is the MeUndies team writes, we apologize for the error of our copywriter. Please find attached, updated, less salacious copy for our ad. MeUndies makes me feel good. Undies Uranus would be proud to wear. Sincerely, the MeUndies team sent in by Bobby
Godfrey. I'm still coping with your female read of the MeUndies ad. I'm still, it haunts me.
Shattering.
From weeks ago?
Is haunts the right word?
Paul in Silver Spring, Maryland, first time, long time. You mentioned during Tuesday's open that you were up early at 5:15 a.m. Early relative to what? That seems like a late morning for you.
It does, yes.
Luke Weskowski. My name is Luke Weskowski. I'm 20 and I'm from Sydney, Australia.
Oh, yes.
Is this Luke? Are you Luke? It's another one.
Another Australian.
I just want to say.
Two of them.
That's not Luke.
I just want to show. I just want to say I love the show and PTI. You're an inspiration to me as I'm doing my best in sports writing myself. I have a few articles up online, but I'm currently looking for a full-time job. Just want to thank you for your insightful takes. I love takes. And entertainment every week. Nothing but respect for you, Luke Weskowski. We're overwhelmed by Australians today. That makes us very happy.
Land of wonder.
Yes, and I know what they... David. Instead of David, David.
David.
Tom Dore in Chicago, Illinois. And on Monday's show, you had someone in attendance wearing a Kobe sweatshirt. Yes, and you wondered which of the three schools, Kobe, Bates, and Bowdoin, were the best academic institutions. Well, I suggest doing what I do. Whenever you meet anyone from any of the three, just ask, oh, so you couldn't get into blank, and insert either of the other two school names. It's always a hit.
Yes.
From Chris Foster in El Paso, Texas. It's your favorite Subaru sales rep. I'm taking a short vacation this weekend to Nashville, and I was looking for some help for some littles in the area. I've never been, nor do I have any connections there. I was hoping I could meet up with someone who could show me the lesser-known attractions. Please give my email to anyone willing to oblige. If littles are out there and can help Chris. And this reminds me of something, because the other day, somebody came into the show here who was a little and said we should have a message board in Chatter. Where, by the way, next Monday, I will be a celebrity bartender before the Redskins game.
Wow, bearing the lead.
The socialite assures me I don't have to mix any drinks. I just have to stand there. But he said, just put a blackboard up so littles can sign in. And so when other littles come to the bar, they can find each other because they have this show in common. So as long as the socialite is here, Alan, don't you think that's a good idea? Yeah, Alan was paying
loves
no attention.
Alan loves to be.
Nancy is here. Alan is here. Alan paid no
attention. Alan,
I might have just asked Alan for $85,000 to change a light.
You got it.
No problem.
Bill from Kensington. I've seen that tie before. It's ridiculous, but you got to understand it was on sale 80% off plus a coupon and rebate, and it came free with a bowl of soup. That's the Keith Hernandez tie. Not last night, the night before, that bright green tie. Keith Farmer in Athens, Georgia. Given that Wednesday, October 18th is the 60th anniversary of John Lennon and Sir Paul McCartney performing on stage together for the first time, didn't you sneak out of high school and escape a vice principal to watch this in person? What was travel like getting there? Well, we had to take a horse and buggy. That's how we did it. If you're out on your bike tent, everyone, as always, do wear white. And to the few people who were here, thank you so much for showing up.
You're welcome.
I wish one of your guys had children if I could kick them in the head or stomp on their testicles for you to feel my pain. Because that's the pain I have waking up every day.
From the hill, you can see the view. The lights in the city. Driving lost through the avenues. Life can be so pretty in the city. Or maybe I'm a of the city, everything moves, everything moves. Everything stops when I'm with you. And through my window I can see it shine. Oh, I've got plans, oh, I've got plans, and I've been trying. Everything moves, everything.
do anything.